Amen. And I'm going to share the word as well. This is from Luke 24, if you want to follow along, from verse 13, the walk to Emmaus. That same day, two of Jesus' followers were walking to the village of Emmaus, 7 miles from Jerusalem. As they walked along, they were talking about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things, Jesus himself suddenly came and began walking with them. But God kept them from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing so intently as you walk along?" They stopped short, sadness written across their faces. Then one of them, Cleopas, replied, "You must be the only person in Jerusalem who hasn't heard about all the things that have happened there in the last few days." "What things?" Jesus asked. "The things that happened to Jesus, the man from Nazareth," they said. "He was a prophet who did powerful miracles, and he was a mighty teacher in the eyes of God and all the people. But our leading priests and other religious leaders handed him over to be condemned to death, and they crucified him. We had hoped he was the Messiah who had come to rescue Israel. This all happened about 3 days ago." Then some women from our group of his followers were at his tomb early this morning, and they came back with an amazing report. They said his body was missing, and they had seen angels who told them Jesus is alive. Some of our men ran out to see, and sure enough, his body was gone, just as the women had said. Then Jesus said to them, "You foolish people, you find it so hard to believe all that the prophets wrote in the scriptures."
Thank you. I think you stopped early, actually, there, Matt. I think it was 30-something, wasn't it? Where is it going in the plan, Keith? What did it say? It was 35, but never mind. Matt, come back, come back. Come on, it does matter. I'm just suddenly thinking, it does matter. Keep going on in your Bible. It might not be on the screen, but keep going to the... Because they're standing there confused in their, in their thing. It's a bit of a strange place to finish.
Then Jesus said to them, "You foolish people, you find it so hard to believe all that the prophets wrote in the scriptures. Wasn't it clearly predicted that the Messiah would have to suffer all these things before entering his glory?" Then Jesus took them through the writings of Moses and all the prophets, explaining from the scriptures the things concerning himself. By this time, they were nearing Emmaus and the end of their journey. Jesus acted as if he was going on, but they begged him, "Stay the night with us, since it's getting late." So he went home with them. As they sat down to eat, he took the bread and blessed it. Then he broke it and gave it to them. Suddenly their eyes were opened, and they recognized him. And at that moment, he disappeared. They said to each other, "Didn't our hearts burn within us as he talked with us on the road and explained the scriptures to us?" And within the hour, they were on their way back to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 disciples and the others who had gathered with them, who said, "The Lord has really risen. He appeared to Peter."
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's so good to hear God's word and to get to the end of the story. Last week, we talked about our foundation. We looked at our roots, and we sat in the truth that we are rooted and grounded in a love that is deeper than our deepest failure. But as we all know, a tree doesn't just grow roots to stay underground. It grows roots so it has the strength to reach upwards and outwards. And so today we want to think about not just being rooted, but about, and not just going up, but about how we can journey, how we can move, how we can walk. There's a common myth in our culture today that faith is a private solo trek, just me and my Bible against the world. But if you look at the life of Jesus, he never called a disciple to a solo hike. He called them into a caravan, you know, that caravan of people that walked along the road. He called them so that they could walk side by side, sharing bread together, sharing doubts together, occasionally stepping on each other's toes. In the early church, they didn't call themselves Christians at first. They called themselves the Way. And this title implies movement. It implies a path. implies that being a disciple of Jesus isn't a destination you arrive at. It's a place, a pace you keep with the people walking next to you. So today, we're going to be asking some hard questions of what it means to be in a community. Who are you walking with? Who is carrying your pack when you're too tired to go on? And who are you helping to stay on the path? We aren't just here to sit in pews. We aren't just here to sit in chairs in rows. We're here to walk the way together. Last week, I introduced a manifesto that we spoke together, our church mission statement, and I'd love you to read it together again today. We'll stay seated and we'll read this together. Let's go. We are rooted in the depth of Jesus' love, finding our strength in him alone. We are journeying together as his disciples, walking the way of faith side by side. We are reaching out with open hands, bringing the hope of the gospel to our world. So let's go back to the myth of the solo trek. It's been said that if you want to go fast, go on your own. If you want to go far, travel with others. A few years ago, there was five of us from the church that did a most ridiculous non-stop walk. We thought we would start at London Eye in London and walk to the Spinnaker Tower, because why not? And so we did this. There was five of us. There was a guy called Paul Clements. There was Matt, his brother, who was in a wheelchair. There was Chippy, Steve, and myself. And we raised many, many thousands of pounds. Well, a good few thousands of pounds. We were slightly disappointed that there was someone who shaved his head off. No, that's... that would be quite drastic. He shaved his hair off. That's all he did. And he got more money for the same... This is ridiculous. But anyway, we did this walk from London to Portsmouth. There's some pictures on the screen. And so we did this walk. There's the five of us starting in the top left-hand corner at London Eye. You can just about see the things in the London Eye. And then about 36 hours later, we arrived. No, it wasn't 36, 10... About 30 hours later, we arrived at the Spinnaker Tower, and it was a lovely time. It was fascinating. It was good. It was a long journey, but there's a couple of points that I always remember. Early in the morning, because we started at 10 o'clock on Saturday morning, and we finished about 4 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. And early on Sunday morning, just as it was getting light, Paul got alongside me. And I suppose I'll have to confess that it was meant to be all five of us did this non-stop walk. Chippy's knee sort of exploded, and so he had to pause. He had to give up, and then he injected himself with some drugs, and he joined us for the end, which was really good, but he didn't do the whole thing. Matt was in wheelchair, and he would have done the whole thing, but during the night especially, we were going along these narrow country lanes, and we thought if a car comes, we can sort of fall into a bush if necessary to get out of the way from a car, but Matt won't be able to, so we thought this wasn't safe, so from safety thing. And then we also had to be safe with Steve because he was just falling asleep as he was walking along, and so we thought at any stage he's going to just wander somewhere. And so at one stage there was just myself and Paul walking. There was always others that joined us for a little bit, but it was only Paul and myself that had sort of fully done it non-stop. And early in the morning, Paul came up to me as we were walking along, and he said, "Simon, I just want to give up. It's just such hard work. I just want to sleep, and I want to stop." And I said, "Paul, come on, we've got to keep doing this. We've been doing this for 24 hours already. We're raising loads of money. We're the only ones left that are still going. We've got to keep going. We've got to keep going. Come on, if you keep going, look, I'm going to keep going. You keep going with me. Keep going with me." And he went, "Oh, yeah, okay." At about midday on that Sunday, whereas we were getting close to Cosham, I was thinking, I really want to give up. There's still such a long way to go. And I said to Paul, I just need to stop. And he went, "No, Simon, come on, let's keep going. I'm going to keep going. You keep going with me." And he almost said the exact same words that I'd said to him 4 hours earlier. And it just reminded me of the importance of journeying together, the importance of helping one another to keep going. It's not just one person has all the strength, all the time, to enable us to keep going. We needed each other. We needed the support of others. I would always remember, the other thing I remember is Dan Taylor, one of our leaders, at 6 o'clock in the morning, as we were coming along this long, dark road, and we could just see in the distance Dan getting out of his car, and he was carrying something at 6 o'clock in the morning. It just got light. And we thought, what is he carrying? What's he carrying? And he arrived with us, and he said, "I've got you some ice cream." Okay. It was gorgeous. It was the best thing. But it's true, isn't it? We always need other people if we're going to walk this journey of faith. Not because it's from London to Portsmouth, but it's from now until eternity. It's a long walk. It's a long walk that we need encouragement to finish. But it's so true, isn't it, that we live, especially when it comes to faith, in an individualistic society. You know, don't talk to me about religion. Don't talk to me about this. This is what's important to me. This is my faith. This is my reality. This is who I am. No, I don't, you know, or maybe I'm strong enough. This is mine. I don't need your help. I don't need other people because I'm strong enough. I can do this. I'm able. But the Bible never suggests that we should be a lone ranger. Yeah, whether it's the disciples that were sent out in two by two, sent out in groups, whether it was the households in that they met in Acts, where the whole family got baptized, or the whole family met together. Yet people were never meant to be Christians on their own. Yes, it's important we have an individual faith, but that doesn't mean our faith is just for us. Yeah, our faith is something to be shared with others. Our faith, you know, it's others that help us grow in our faith, help us grow in our faith, help us stay in our faith. Yeah, it's so important. As I said earlier on, you know, the Christians were first called the Way. This was a group of people who were on the way. They weren't called that group of individuals that following Jesus. These were people on the way. The way it comes up in Acts chapter 9. Saul was uttering threats with every breath and was eager to kill the Lord's followers. So he went to the high priest. He requested letters addressed to the synagogues in Damascus, asking for their cooperation in the arrest of any followers of the way he found there. He wanted to bring them, both men and women, back to Jerusalem in chains. It's that idea, isn't it, that, yeah, we're in this together because we don't know what persecution might come. We're in this together because we don't know what disaster might come. We're in this together because you don't know what illness might come, or diagnosis might come, or unemployment might come, or relationship breakdown might come. So we have to be in this together. In the ancient Near East, moving through the desert, travelers would form these caravans for three reasons: protection from thieves, provision, sharing food and water, and perspective. When one gets lost, the others know the way. Wouldn't it be good to be in caravans today as we journey in faith, so that we're protected from the enemy, so that we can share food and water with one another, share good news, share what the Bible is saying, share prayer with one another, and get perspective, so that when one is lost or is stumbling, there's others that can help. Yeah, we could think about Roman soldiers who went together, didn't they? Locking their shields together because they knew they were stronger together. You know, in the gold rush in America, you know, prospectors travelled in groups because they needed to encourage each other. They needed to protect each other. They needed to share those challenges and those joys that they were going through. The importance of going together. And our reading this morning from Luke 24, where these two followers are walking together. In a way, this highlights the danger of just walking together without Jesus. Because these followers were seemingly getting more and more despondent, more and more disillusioned. They weren't encouraging one another as much as discouraging one another. They were, and you can imagine them thinking, oh, we'll get to Emmaus and then we'll get on with our lives. We'll get on with our lives and doing whatever it else. But Jesus came alongside them and talks to them and helps them to think, helps them to reflect, helps them to remember what Jesus had said, help them to remember God's perspective on this situation. And that's the joy, isn't it? When we can walk together, when we can walk with someone and we include Jesus in our walk, it can be so beneficial. And of course, you might think, well, I don't go for walks. No, but we walk through life together, don't we? We share coffee with one another. We go shopping together. We share a lift together. We, whatever it might be, these in-between moments, these moments in life where we can share our walk together honestly and so that we're allowing each other, or allowing the other person, to encourage us, to speak into our lives. I always remember a message that was given many years ago by a guy, by Matt Summerfield, who talked about live life 1, 2, 3. And he said, wouldn't it be great if everyone was living life 1, 2, 3. He said, really, what we all need is the one person that we can look up to, the one person that we know we can trust in, we can rely on, the one person we can go to for help, because they've sort of been there before. They're a bit further on in the walk. That one person that we can go to. Wouldn't it be great if we all had that one person we could go to? They might not, I don't think they necessarily need to be older or wiser. They just need to be someone that you say, yeah, I'm going to put my trust. I'm going to come to you and be really honest. I'm going to allow you to speak into my life. Yeah, that person that is there, that's the one. The two people who are running mates. The two people who will walk alongside you. The two people that you make yourself accountable to. The two people that you say, yeah, I'm here for you. Yeah, and you know they're there for you. They're like really good friends, but they're not just friends. Because if we're just friends, you can end up discouraging one another and taking people away from God. They're friends that include Jesus, so that we can get God's perspective on things. They're friends who help us walk the faith. And then the one we look up to, the two that are alongside us, and then three that we're helping to grow in faith, that we're saying, yeah, I want to encourage into faith. I want to encourage into this walk. And this idea, this one, two, three, it was saying that the world would change, wouldn't it? The world would change if everyone had one person they were looking up, two people they were walking with, and three people that they were helping to disciple, helping to walk in faith. Wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't that be great? And I think that's what, you know, the Bible teaches as well. You know, there's a great phrase, you know, great verse in 2 Timothy 2, chapter 2. Easy one to remember, 2 Timothy 2, 2. You have heard me teach things that have been confirmed by many reliable witnesses. Now teach these truths to other trustworthy people who will be able to pass them on to others. Yet this idea that it's not just the people we're walking with, but we hear stuff from people and we pass stuff on to others who pass it on to others. Because we're walking together. Who are the people that you are walking with? Who are the people that you can rely on? Who are the people that you're supporting to grow? Yeah, who are the people that you're encouraging to get up again, to keep walking? Who are the people that you've got as part of your walk, your journey of faith? Yes, we've got everyone, but we need particular people that we know I can be really honest with. I can really say what's going on with. I think church could be transformed. But not only that, I think there would be so many more people who would keep walking the journey of faith. So often I see when people leave the church or just fade from the church, it's because they haven't allowed anyone to speak into their lives. They haven't allowed anyone to walk with them. They haven't allowed anyone to be the one that gets alongside them and speaks God's perspective, Jesus' words, into their lives. So I think it's really, really important. The problem is that when we walk together with others, we do step on their toes. Yeah, we do bump into each other. We do sometimes hurt one another. We do sometimes say the wrong thing. We do sometimes we're really rude to someone else. And it's tough, isn't it? Because we think, oh, wouldn't it be easier if I wasn't on this walk? Yeah, I mean, because you might be getting blisters. Wouldn't it be easier if I wasn't on this walk? But we know that's not the case. We know that's not the case, don't we? We have to be on this walk because this is the walk that God calls us to. And yes, someone might tread on my toes. Someone might get in the way. Someone might upset me. But that is what makes us stronger. Yet that is what makes us more of a community that walk together. In Hebrews chapter 10, it says, let us think of ways to motivate one another to acts of love and good works. In another translation, it says, let us think of ways to provoke one another. And if you look at what the word for provoke means, it means sort of a sharp rubbing. Let's rub sharply together to encourage each other to good works. I love that. It's not just always being, oh, you're so lovely. You're so lovely. Why don't you? Sometimes we've got to rub sharply together. Or as the well-known words in Proverbs 27, you know, as iron sharpens iron, so we should sharpen one another. Iron doesn't sharpen iron in a nice, gentle way. Yeah, there's normally sparks and there's heat. But it sharpens. I don't know about you, but are you willing for others to be provoke you? For others to really challenge you? No, thanks. I just want, I came a Christian because I want things easy. Jesus never said it would be easy. And if we, yeah, I don't know about you, but we need to be provoked. We need people to say tough words, hard words, because we're on this walk. We want to be more like Jesus. We want to grow in our faith and become more and more like Jesus. Yeah, it's so easy to give up. So easy to give up. Even if we've been rooted in love, if we're not walking with people, if we're not giving people permission to speak into our lives, it's like these two followers. If they weren't being really honest, and going, well, haven't you heard? It's all gone horribly wrong. We thought Jesus was going to be great, but he wasn't. He was killed. It's just rubbish. Yet they were honest. When was the last time you said to someone, you know, I'm trying to follow God, but at the moment it all just feels completely rubbish? Sometimes we've got to be honest like that, because if we're not honest, then we just think, oh, God's rubbish, and we wander away. Yeah, this is really tough. This is really horrible. This isn't what I expected. Yeah, let's talk with one another about that. Because we can help one another. We can bring God's perspective into that situation, whatever situation it is. Yeah, or we can just listen and pray. But let's not let others fall. Let's not let others stumble. Let's not let others give up. So are you ready to move from sitting in lines to journeying in groups, journeying in circles, journeying in faith together? Just one final question. Who knows the real state of your soul? On this journey, who knows the real state of your soul? And if you tripped tomorrow, who is close enough to catch you?